Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
And a good afternoon to you all. Welcome to another hour of this Ave Maria in the Afternoon Year in Review. You know, this time between Christmas and New Year's can be kind of a quiet lull time, kind of a time for everybody to just catch their breath. But it's another day for us to talk about some rather intense topics. If you joined us yesterday, you know, we talked about a woman who lost her son to a ChatGPT conversation. You can find that in the archives if you missed it. And today we're going to talk about two other major issues that are of concern to parents. The first being gender. Bishop Daniel Thomas of Toledo has released an excellent document helping to understand the Catholic teaching on gender ideology. It's really geared towards parents and teachers to deal with this issue. And then an issue that's become really a problem, and that is the issue of addiction, whether it be to chemicals, whether it be to alcohol, or whether it be to this new rise of gambling. All of those things are problems that families are confronting. Dr. Ray Guarendi joins Marcus to talk about that after this news break.
Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, December 30th. It's the Feast of Blessed Eugenia Revasco. Today's news is brought to you by the nonprofit Revive app. Looking for peace in this chaotic world? A certified spiritual companion can help on the Revive app. That's R-E-V-I-V and then the number 3. A new report says a U.S. land strike in Venezuela was carried out by the CIA. Jim Roop reports.
CNN is reporting a CIA drone hit a remote dock on the Venezuelan coast earlier this month. The network cites sources saying the U.S. believed the facility was being used by the Tren de Aragua gang as part of its operation to store and ship drugs. The report says no one was at the facility when the strike happened and there were no casualties. President Trump says the U.S. had targeted a dock connected to drug trafficking, but did not go into specifics.
A federal judge in California has ruled the federal government can share Medicaid information with ICE. Sharing Medicaid information has been blocked by a preliminary injunction involving 20 states. Influenza activity is surging nationwide amid holiday gatherings and travel.
The CDC says there have been at least 4.6 million confirmed cases so far this flu season, 49,000 hospitalizations, and more than 1,900 deaths. Most are linked to subclade K, a mutant strain of H3N2, which is linked to influenza A. The CDC has labeled flu activity very high in New York and New Jersey, which have both announced record weeks. Rhode Island, Louisiana, and Colorado also have very high flu activity. I'm Michael Kastner.
Google has released the top searches of 2025. Charlie Kirk was the highest trending search of the year. Meanwhile, the hit Netflix animated movie K-pop Demon Hunters came in second, followed by the hot collectible LaBooBoo Dolls in third. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
You're listening to the 2025 Ave Maria in the Afternoon Year in Review.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Joining me to talk about a recent document he released for the sake of his diocese is Bishop Daniel Thomas, Bishop of Toledo, Ohio since 2014, chairman of the USCCB's Pro-Life Activities Committee. He recently released this document, The Body Reveals the Person, a Catholic Response to the Challenges of Gender Ideology for the Diocese of Toledo. Your Excellency, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Dr. Marcus, thank you. Great to be with you and all your listeners. And thanks so much for the opportunity to chat today about this new guidance document, The Body Reveals the Person.
I'm very thankful for this document, and I'm actually firmly convinced that this, alongside contributions of some of your fellow bishops like Archbishop Vigneron, are going to really shape the local church's response to what is otherwise a pervasive attack on especially young children. And so as pastor and as shepherd, I want to invite you to share with us your own fatherly heartbreak at your children being besieged with this onslaught of gender ideology.
Right. Thank you, Marcus. Of course, the first reality, people often say, well, why would you write something like this? And I think, of course, it's prompted by a fatherly heart.
Yeah.
Because, of course, any father who knows that his children are in distress wants to assist his children and to help them, first of all, with love, with patience, with prudence, and, of course, with truth and charity. So I think all of those things really sum up the effort, because I've been asked repeatedly. I open the document by saying, you know, people have expressed their concerns for this, and you know, we can't expect that our faithful can go to every single, Vatican teaching or document. And so I tried to put together in a very readable and, I hope, a digestible way, something that people can take, first, to understand what is this gender ideology, second, to realize, you know, the facts of what exists in our culture, third, you know, to say, here is Catholic teaching, especially on the human person, and obviously the theology of the body, to warn against the harms of transitioning and what that looks like, and then to offer pastoral guidance and a pastoral response as best we can.
One of the issues that you highlight as a result of considering the pastoral nature of the issue is that when someone ascribes to gender ideology, it's a direct attack on the human person and denies that there's a real God-willed duality to the sexual nature of the human person. I want to invite you to comment on that, and even from your own experience, how that damages people.
Surely. Well, I think the document points out, and certainly as Christians and with our basis in sacred scripture, we understand that from conception, we are assigned a sex, and that is assigned by the Lord, and it's given to us even before our birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not something that can be changed. It's not something arbitrary, and it's not something that depends on feelings. Now, with great sensitivity to the suffering that folks might be feeling, I think we also have to say, you know, I love to teach, Marcus. I think, as you know from our chats, I like to teach by analogy. And so, you know, I have had this question even in some of our Catholic schools, and persons will ask, well, why would you not, why does the church teach against this, in quotes? Well, the church teaches love, and she teaches the understanding of the body that is in accordance with the Lord and his teaching. And by analogy, I always ask, if you had a young woman who was clearly suffering from anorexia, you would certainly not affirm her decision to fast even further and really to compromise her bodily integrity.
Right.
So likewise, why would we in any way affirm someone where they are perhaps, you know, really deeply struggling emotionally, psychologically, spiritually? Why would we affirm that this is a good thing? We would want to help them and to draw them out of that for healing and for recognizing who they were created to be, obviously, in the image and likeness of God according to his will.
One of the things you highlight in your document, as you just mentioned, in rejecting God's plan for human persons and his will for us, is that social media has really hyped up the narrative and created a real social contagion. And I'm no expert on the matter, but I can safely say this. I think the actual amount of individuals who have true severe body dysmorphia, gender dysphoria, whatever, is significantly lesser than the sheer number of people who are coming out identifying as transgender. And social media as a social contagion has a lot to do with it, as you've mentioned.
Yes, exactly. And of course, the reality is that much of media content is very, very damaging to our young people, because it's to social media that they are turning rather than to trusted adults, to parents, to others in their lives who would be able to assist them with truth and charity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're turning to social media, which is inundating them with these messages. And I think we can't, you know, they denigrate the traditional morality and biblical beliefs, and we can't take that lightly. And we really have to assist them to realize the damage that's being done.
Considering that, you know, like thinking about the damage that's being done, you really employ the language of the theology of the body, especially the spousal nuptial meaning of the body. And I really want to commend you for the brilliance of doing so. Can you please speak to why that kind of a biblical anthropology is the solution to this problem?
Surely. And I think that's, you know, some people may say, well, it might be a little bit elevated language, but I hope, Dr. Peter, that the language is explained clearly enough that people will be able to engage it. Mm-hmm. And the spousal nature of the body clearly has created, and it's interesting, you know, we tried to choose very attractive, inviting, and enlivening artwork for this. So the picture of the image of Adam and Eve on the cover is actually in the Toledo Museum of Art, believe it or not. But that spousal meaning, you know, that the body reveals a person as a boy or a girl, and following sacred scripture, of course, from Genesis, male and female, he made them. Mm-hmm. And it indicates the equal dignity of man and woman as created, and their personal exalted goodness, as I write, of their complementary bodily selves.
Right.
So there is this complementarity, and then obviously this spousal meaning, that this is the very meaning of the body itself.
Your Excellency, because of that, one other thing you highlight just a little later in the document is that's precisely why there's no realm within which a man can say he feels like a woman, or a woman can say she feels like a man, because you're effectively saying, because of the complementary nature of the sexes, that's an impossibility.
Right. So I think we have to be careful there, because somebody can steal something, but I even do address that, Dr. Peter, I'm using your last name and your first name.
No, that's good. That's fine.
The reality is that feelings cannot define. Mm-hmm. So persons may have feelings of this or that, but the recognition has to say, what is the inherent goodness of this personal and spousal meaning? And, of course, the basis of the church's teaching about the imperative of respecting and caring for one's body, and the grave wrongness of rejecting one's sex, trying to alter the characteristics to appear to change the body, because the reality is we simply cannot change reality. So while we recognize people's feelings, we also realize that we cannot change reality, and we have to help them regarding those feelings, and in every way assist them, if possible, to align those feelings with, of course, the truth and objective reality.
One thing you do highlight then as a response to that is that the church and, you know, good pastors recognize people are in pain as a result of all of these issues, but the way forward isn't the overt affirmation and validation of every single feeling and whim that the human person might be undergoing.
Right. And I think we have to acknowledge that people are in pain. Mm-hmm. We have to acknowledge that people are carrying crosses, which they find very heavy. You know, I even indicate that as Christians, we're called to be like Simon of Cyrene,
right,
helping them to bear their crosses. But we have to recognize, again, that, for example, I indicate, you know, good medicine will recognize the difference between empathy and appropriately acknowledging a person's feelings on the one hand, and on the other, allowing a person's feelings to dictate medical care, which is contrary to objective truth in his or her situation. So we can't allow feelings to be determinative, and in fact, they really are not a reliable indicator of one's identity.
Yeah. In about 20 seconds, can you please give us a fatherly exhortation in facing this issue?
Surely. So I guess the first thing I would do is invite folks to read the document at www.toledodiocese.org. And I would say to conclude, for those who struggle, whether that is those who struggle personally with these issues or familially or with friends, you are loved by Christ, by the church, and by your bishops. Your sufferings are not meaningless, but Christ can transform them.
Thank
you. So stand firm in prayer, the sacraments, and Christian fellowship, and trust that God's plan is for your good, because in the end, your body reveals who God created you to be.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V. And then the number 3.
You're listening to the Ave Maria in the Afternoon, 2025 Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, joined by the inimitable legendary Dr. Ray Guarendi. He is a psychologist, but also a Catholic, and apparently the two are, they can go hand in hand.
They can go hand in hand, but they can also butt heads pretty hard. Pretty hard. You drill down deep into psychology, and you'll find that there's a lot of Psych 101 that collides with our faith.
I mean, Ray, I took enough psychology that I could have a second undergraduate degree. It was just, you know, like I extra majored in mind and whatnot, right? And nowhere was I introduced to the concept that God or a notion of spirituality could be part of a psychological examination of the human person.
And that's an irony, too, because therapists will tell you that a good percentage, perhaps the majority, that come into the office have a religious worldview of some type, and it interacts with the way they interact with the world. We were told in grad school, you do not explore religion with a person. You maintain a dogmatically neutral stance.
And they don't see the irony of this.
They didn't see the irony in it. So what I found was all I had to do was ask the people, where does your religious faith play into any of this? Mm-hmm. And most of them will then tell you, well, I'm this, I'm that, I'm mm-hmm. this. Or they'll say, I don't pay any attention to religion whatsoever. So you realize as a therapist how you interweave the two together. Somebody tells me, I'm leaving my wife and 5 kids, and basically I don't care, and I don't have any religious beliefs, and I got to approach that very differently than I might approach it from a guy who says, I'm really struggling with my conscience because I'm a devout Catholic, and and I don't know what this is going to do to me and my relationship with God. It's a completely different approach.
You know, I'm listening to you say all this, and I'm realizing we are bereft, completely bereft of a notion that God knows our mind better than we know our mind. And if we can be very honest, the entire work of psychology is a relatively novel area in the soft sciences. You know, okay, like I was schooled in the Freudian Jungian structures, but then over and above that, they threw at us, you know, B.F. Skinner, operant conditioning. And then you had that whole rise in the 60s with Norman Vincent Peale and his ilk.
Positive thinking.
Yeah, the pop psychology stuff. And you start wondering, every decade or so, we're at the whim of some new school of thought.
Oh, yeah. That's because we're going to, in psychology, my first book was titled You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And I wrote it because I was 28 years old, and I was in a mental health center in Columbiana County. And I was shocked at the number of well-meaning, pretty thoughtful, level-headed parents completely confused, unsure of themselves, thinking they're going to do something psychologically damaging to their child's long-term makeup. I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. I remember thinking, I don't remember my mom and dad agonizing over which move to make when and how it's going to affect me when I'm on the Springer show 22 years from now. So the book was written in a response to what is psychology doing to parents. And it's only gotten worse.
Because, you think about that whole pop psychology movement, right? The whole thing was, you need to make sure you're feeling good about yourself all the time. And then that translated into parenting. Parents, you have an obligation to make sure your kid feels good all the time. I'm a parent of three children on earth. They're 4, 3, and 1. If I lived by that principle, my kids would run amok.
They'd be brats.
Yeah.
They'd be obnoxious little self-centered brats. And don't be surprised, Marcus, how many parents are living by that principle because they look at people like me. Well, he's got a letter after his name, you know, PhD, permanent head damage. And they're looking at this thinking, well, the guy knows how to do it, so you better just listen to him. Well, that goes against my instincts, but who knows? I always tell parents, it's your home, your morals. You're raising this child according to the things you feel most important in life. Not Dr. You'll Feel Good, not some secular expert who thinks God is a long-ago makeup of antiquated Neanderthals. And that's what's happening. And I've noticed psychology really influences everything. It influences our education. It influences our religion. Much religion has swallowed whole a lot of psychological principles that they don't realize if you examine them with any depth, they would collide. There's a book by a guy named William Kilpatrick called The Seduction of Psychology, and he talks about this. He says, on the surface, tolerance, open-mindedness, affirming of people. Sounds so Christian, and it really does, but then you start digging deeper and deeper. I wrote a book called Jesus the Master Psychologist. And what I commented upon in so many ways is, here's Jesus saying things that in our modern thinking collides. When you do something, just say, I'm a worthless servant. Wait, whoa, Jesus. Hey, wait a minute, man. Come on, didn't you take Psych 1? Didn't you have a counseling class? You can't say you're a worthless servant.
What's that going to do yourself esteem?
Yeah, oh, that's terrible. Yeah, exactly.
And so Kilpatrick in The Seduction of Psychology, he goes right for the jugular. You know, he talks about things like pop psychology and the moralistic, therapeutic version of psychology. And he goes on, or even gentle parenting, right? And he addresses how that stuff tells you that if you do this, you'll feel good and it's all tolerant. But then if you go against that, then you're the bigot.
Let me tell you what's going to happen bad to your kid and your family if you ignore what I say.
Right.
That's a classic formula of, here's the psychologically correct way to do it. If you do it this way, we virtually guarantee you're going to get the outcome you want.
Right.
If you don't get the outcome you want, it's because you did it wrong.
Right.
And don't blame us if you ignore us. And your kid turns out to be on Springer for a week and a half because you simply went against us. And we know better than you do what's good for your kid.
Right. Or Dr. Phil. Yeah, can't forget his show. Although he does a lot of good work. Now, yesterday, and this is personal to me too. Yesterday, we had the death anniversary of Matthew Perry. Many of our listeners remember him as the character Chandler from Friends.
And you know, I never saw Friends once.
I don't blame you.
I have never seen any. I play trivia, and I listen to these questions that are being asked, and I want to say to these teams who win, what have you done with your life? How do you know that?
That's right. Especially this pop culture stuff. And so Friends, it was weird. It was coming out in popularity when I was really young, so I wasn't in the target group, and I chanced upon a few episodes as a very young child. And I never found it funny, so I never watched it. But this after his death, I started looking up some of his stuff, and this guy had a bit of a... He's like you. He had... Mastered,
short?
No.
Okay.
He mastered the art of comedy down to delivery and timing and the right kind of linguistic wit. And so he had honed this. He had a gift for it, but he had honed it. And so it was really sad that at 53, he died of a ketamine overdose in his bathtub, in a hot tub at home. And it was this long life of just dealing with addiction and substance abuse and in and out of rehab. He'd go to rehab, and then when the wards weren't looking, he'd call someone to come to the parking lot and he'd buy ketamine. He just never could kick it. And I know that's such a broad way to open the topic, but you're dealing with all of this from the side of helping parents whose children are suffering from addictions in this hedonistic age.
It is easy to become discontent with life. And the irony is, we are the most comfortable, secure, well-fed, long-living culture the world has ever seen. And yet we're among the most discontent if you look at worldwide surveys. We rank near the bottom in contentedness. So when you're that discontent, I gotta find something to make me feel better. I got to find something. I'm searching here for something, okay? So whether it's ketamine, whether it's a drug experience, I want to feel different. I want to feel different than I do. And I think at the beginning roots of addiction is the fact that I got to find something that's going to make me much more content, more relaxed, more stable, more pleasurable. Whatever it is, there's something missing in just my living life. I think that's down at the bottom.
My guest is Dr. Ray Guarendi, master psychologist, Catholic, and the two go hand in hand. And he's talking with us about the reality of addiction and how Christ, the master psychologist, gives us the way forward. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I said on the air, go to confession, and when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
He always starts with the good things. You know, the seven letters to the churches and the book of Revelation is a great way to write letters to other people, by the way, or to have conversations with other people. You start with what's going well. You do this, this, and this really well. I love it. Thank you. here's what you're lacking. And I think for many of us as men, what the Lord's communicating at that second part of the letter or the second part of the conversation is, here's what we're lacking. You don't ever spend enough time with me. You have no idea what I'm trying to offer you in the gift of my friendship. Or if you do, you don't make time for it. And if you would but come to me, I would change your life like that. But you don't come. Not with the regularity that I want you to come. Not with the ardor and the fervor and the passion that I want you to come. I have a hunch, like more than a hunch, that's what he says to me. And I got a hunch that's what he would say to many of us.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents. And despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
2025, Ave Maria in the Afternoon, Year in Review.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Speed. I'm talking with Dr. Ray Guarendi. He's a master psychologist and preacher evangelist, and we're talking about the reality of addiction. Ray, at the end of the last segment, we had just brought up the reality of Matthew Perry, but it's not just him. It's not an isolated event. We've known a lot of names throughout history who've gotten all the fame, all the fortune in the world. Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston. And the ending was the same, some kind of substance abuse
addiction. I'm not content with what I have. There's got to be more. And I think it's safe to say that those people who are, as you say, at the upper echelons of society's admiration and pleasure are more likely to get into those kind of conscious-altering states. They can't be content and pleased with all that is coming their way. There has to be more.
You know, the human nature tells you that if I achieve these upper echelons, you know, the wealth, the pleasure, the power, the honor, I will reach some kind of psychological satisfaction.
And they don't. That's the irony. That's the irony. They don't. It's one of the great arguments for God. And C.S. Lewis said that. He said, if there's nothing in the world that can satisfy me, it must mean I was made for another world. That makes total sense. Why wouldn't you be? Look at you. Look at what you have. And yet you're miserable. How does that fit? The farm mom who raised 7 kids, and you measure her peace with life, and she's leagues above the highest musician or the greatest athlete in terms of her contentment with her existence. How is this? This makes no sense. Our culture says you should feel better with all that, and you don't. Something's wrong. Well, try this chemical.
Try this chemical, try that chemical. And so what you're saying, you know, we're seeing studies come out of it. I've seen you quote those studies. About since the 2000s, gratitude levels in the developed and wealthy world are going down. Discontent is on the rise. And like you said earlier, and we're the most over-medicated generation in human history.
30% of adult females are now on psychotropic meds. And in some places, 20 to 30% of the boys are medicated for ADHD or ADD.
Would you please repeat that for us, just so that everyone really grasps
certain
it.
Pockets of our society, certain places, where the boys, 20 to 30% of them, are medicated for ADHD or ADD. We've created a culture that is video cocaine. And so when I have to sustain my attention for more than 8 seconds or 3 seconds or a flitting second, stuff like reading and listening to a person talking and sitting in mass and hearing the same prayer I heard last week. Ew! Ew! I use this example. I come from a place not far from an amusement park called Cedar Point. You familiar with it?
Oh, yeah.
known for the most roller coasters in the world. When I was a kid, the big ride at Cedar Point was the Blue Streak. Oh, 45 feet high, 42 miles an hour down that first hill. Oh, what a rush. You stand in line for 2 hours to get to the Blue Streak. And then they got the Mean Streak. And the Mean Streak was higher, and it was faster. Then pretty soon they had the Magnum, which was 200 feet high in the first hill and 70 miles an hour. Well, that was okay until they got the Millennium Force. 300 feet high, 93 miles an hour down the first hill. Ah, that's old. That's last week's news. The high-speed thrill dragster. 400 feet corkscrew high, coming down in a vertical corkscrew spin. If you had sunglasses or contacts, close your eyes. They're going to get blown off you. 200 plus miles an hour out the magnetic chute. Go back to the Blue Streak now. You got mothers there with their four-year-olds. And if some kid, age 13, gets on the Blue Streak, she has to get off going, that was a waste of my time.
Really?
You see what has happened? We've just pushed harder and harder and harder and harder for stimulation, for pleasure, for titillation, and much of everyday life is just routine.
Okay, so what you're highlighting here is that, like you've mentioned, you know, that we're rising in discontent, we're rising in misery. But basically, everyone in the affluent world is miserable
Yes. Right
now. But what you're saying here is it's because we've pushed the threshold of enjoyment so much that the daily beautiful things like a sunset and working on the farm.
Kind of boring, you know?
I hate that I've heard kids say it exactly like that.
They do. It's like, ew. And with smartphones now, and I don't want to veer too off topic, but with smartphones, we're just raising a whole generation of kids who must have immediate stimulation. Immediate. And how will that affect everything else that we once called the human person? Give me my drugs. And the interesting thing about addiction, we always think of it as in terms of an illicit substance or something that is quote-unquote bad for us in the long run. But in fact, we are addicted to psychotropic meds. The amount of people on anxiety-reducing medication is off the charts, whether it's benzodiazepines, where it's serotonin reuptake inhibitors, whatever it is. I don't want to feel uncomfortable. You know, I go into a crowd like that, and I really get anxious. I really get anxious. I'm going to tell my doctor, well, here, take this before you go into that crowd. And I'm not pushed to deal with my own discomfort. Come on, man. Give me something that's quicker. Now, we got it. And that's kind of what's happening. It's washing over us.
Are we seeing a recognition in the psychological industry, the psychiatric industry, pharmaceutical industry, that people are becoming dependent on psychotropic medication?
There are voices. They're not the majority, but more and more people are saying, what are we doing? We've been down this road too long. We're seeing what's happening at the end of it. More and more voices are screaming about smartphones for kids, and you're starting to get a little movement. Social media, some of them are saying, look, the kid's got to prove he's over 16 to get on this stuff. So we're trying, little baby steps, if you use a cliche. Mm-hmm. We're trying to pull it back. The biggest thing is parents to have the guts and the strength to say, I'm countercultural. A faith-filled Catholic parent is going to be countercultural. It's that simple. And if you worry about whatever psychological damage and resentment that you're going to breed in your kid, because he's the only one 14 who doesn't have a smartphone, you better just give him the keys of the car and move out and say, here, kid, it's your house. Because you are unable to raise a child with your morals and standards because, you know, Marcus, the experts tell you, if your standards are too high, your kids are going to rebel. They're going to puke up religion. They're going to turn on everything you ever tried to teach them, and it's all because you were out of sync with the culture. And the kid knew it by the time he was 15, thinking, how did I get these Neanderthals? Yeah, that's the message. I can't tell you now. I used to think that parents were afraid to take these kinds of countercultural stands because they were afraid of doing something psychologically incorrect. I now think they parent in fear. My kid will hate me. My kid will get resentful. My kid will get sneaky. My kid will turn to things that I am fearful of. And so they're parenting in fear. And I say, you can never parent in fear. You can't. I always say this. If my kids go astray from what I tried to teach them, I can live with myself if they had to go through me. I'm not sure I could live with myself if I stepped aside.
We're talking about addictions with Dr. Ray Guarendi. Ray, so many people listening right now have spouses, children, family members who have at least one, if not some kind of addiction. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about things like sports betting and not just substances. Just very quickly, as we're rounding off this segment, we continue on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, Truthly.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the Rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
And now, the EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for those who are suffering with Parkinson's disease. Lord Jesus Christ, consolation of the afflicted, you are our refuge. We pray for those who are suffering the effects of Parkinson's disease. As they lose their physical strength and abilities, increase their spiritual strength and abilities. Renew their inner spirit day after day, and through their share in your sufferings, give the grace of conversion to sinners. In their weakness, reveal your strength. Give peace and joy to those who care for them. Amen.
Was Jesus' risen body the same body he dwelled in while living on earth? According to the Catholic Catechism, it was the same body that was crucified, but it was glorified and different in profound ways from the risen body of Lazarus, which Jesus brought forth from the tomb. Lazarus returned to his same earthly life with the same limitations he had when he left it. Jesus rose with new powers. His body was no longer confined to time and space. He could appear and disappear at will. He could walk through doors. He could also eat and drink, as he did with the apostles, to prove to them that he was not a ghost. He could appear in whatever guise he chose, as he did with Mary Magdalene when she thought he was the gardener. The reality of the resurrection of the body seemed an impossibility to the disciples. They needed the added impetus of God's grace to accept and believe such a reality. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
25, Ave Maria in the afternoon, year in review.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, talking with Dr. Ray Guarendi. He is a clinical psychologist who's been in the forefront of working with integrating the faith into the examination of the psyche of the human person. And he's been doing this for decades now, and he's seen the...
Easy there, pal. You could have just said years.
It was a compliment. I was going to say that you've seen...
Get off my lawn.
So, as you've been rightly highlighting, at this point, especially in the developed world, virtually everyone knows someone suffering from some kind of addiction. Before we go any further, Ray, can you give, first of all, a word of hope that addiction doesn't have to cripple and end you? And secondly, resources.
As a psychologist, the most potent intervention that I've seen in ending an addiction and keeping clean, religious conversion. There's nothing that can touch that. Whatever program you get into, if there isn't a religious focus, it does not succeed as well. So in fact, it speaks to people saying, Oh, wait a minute. I think I'm finding what I've been missing all this time that was brewing my discontent. There was the hole, like Augustine says, the God-sized hole, you know? Now, that said, most people are not going to see it that way. They're not going to go in that direction. The one of the biggest things I have to deal with parents and relatives of folks who have addictions, severe addictions, where they're watching them self-destruct, is their helplessness. They'll call me and they'll be pleading, they'll be begging, tell me how to reach this person. And I'll say, at some point, you have to accept that they, for now, may be unreachable through the standard persuasion or the standard programs or the standard lifestyle suggestions. They may be unreachable. And that is so hard for people to take, Marcus. I see it all the time. You got an adult kid who's 36 years old, making a shambles of her life, and the parent is in agony. Somehow, some way, I gotta rescue this kid. And I tell them, you, in some respects, all you've tried has failed. At some point, you have to be at peace with the fact that now this child is in God's hands, and you'll be praying like crazy. Marcus, I have a daughter in prison. I have a daughter in prison probably for life. Now, was that a reflection of something my wife and I did? No, this daughter, we got her when she was age two. Her birth mom was a crack prostitute. And her brain never worked right from the get-go. And everything that my wife and I did to try to help her. We had 5 group homes, 6 group homes. I was her guardian for 5 years. All kinds of in-house therapies, everything. It just didn't absorb. As a result, she finally did something egregious that we knew was coming, by the way, which is interesting. I told the court system, this is a high risk. And the court system said to me, too bad, so sad. She's an adult. She can do what she wants. And so, therefore, that's what happened. Now, my wife and I are at peace about this because we know we did what we could do. We're not looking back on it and going, oh, man, oh, we screwed this up. We screwed that up. No, we didn't do that. Feel pretty confident saying we were loving, fair parents. Like I always used to say, my standard joke is ruined. I used to say, I got some kids going to serve the church. I got some probably going to serve time. Well, she ruined my best joke, you know? So given that, we have to be at peace. And that's what I tell parents. You're going to have to be, at some point, you're going to have to be in peace. Because God allows people to self-destruct on their own sad choices. You can keep trying to reach, but at some point, In the words of Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to fold them.
You highlighted, I love that song, I grew up with that song. You highlighted a very crucial point that I think a lot of parents heard you say and it resonated with them. And I'm going to share a little bit here. My issue was particularly with single malt scotch, and in most of the British world, any form of scotch is very easy to get. And so I started drinking when I was 16 and started sneaking it into my coffee in the morning and my, you know, hot chocolate in the evening.
And you were a derelict.
It was bad. By the time I was 22, things got really bad. And I snuck it. My parents didn't know.
Did you live at home?
I did. I lived at home until I was, 22. And so I was going through college and everything doing this. So many parents listened to what you said, and you told the courts because you could see ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Some parents have that instinct. Could you please speak to that a little more?
You know your kid better than anybody else. You know your kid better than the experts. Many parents will say to me, well, I'm going to get him assessed. And what are you going to get him assessed for? Well, the way he's living. I got to know why he's living this way, why he's doing that. I go, well, you probably have the most information. You raised him. Yeah, but maybe there's something I'm missing. And I always tell parents, we shrink types. We can describe pretty good. You let me interview you for 3 hours, and I'll have a pretty good sense of what makes you tick. But getting you to change it is the hardest part of any therapy. I always tell people that. I can give you 25 ideas. What I can't give you is the will to do it. And so for parents who see ahead and they see around the next corner and go, you know what? That's bad if he goes around that corner. I go, well, you have to at some point come to peace that you have tried everything you know. You have done what you can. And he refuses it. He doesn't want it. And I always tell folks, Marcus, this is not a farm in 1880. You didn't have to be anywhere near as vigilant in 1880 to keep your kid out of seductions and trouble and addictions and pornography and everything else that's coming at him. You didn't. It's very different now. Never before in human history have we been able to reach inside your house and misshape your kid's soul. For the most part, how a kid was raised, that's what he stayed with. He was raised with that, he stayed with that. Tribe, clan, culture, main influences. Not anymore. Not anymore. The culture, most parents underestimate the culture. I'll have a 17-year-old kid sitting in my office, and parent will say, I don't know who that is. We didn't raise him that way. And I'll say, well, I believe you, but I think you underestimated what did, because all along the way, they were semi-oblivious to the way the culture was shaping this kid. Like you said, you were 22 years old, and you're drinking scotch at home right under your parents' nose. They had no idea. You have to be much more vigilant.
You highlight another crucial point here. I think there was a point where historically we as a society thought that the village would help in the raising of our children.
That's the difference now. That's exactly what's happening. You go back 60 years ago in our culture, there was more of a social direction. You know, the guardrails kind of were there a little higher than they are now. The guardrails are gone. So when a parent has to stand strong and make these decisions, there's a good chance the kid's going to rebel. There's a good chance the kid's going to say, you know what? I can't wait to get out from under you, because over there where the culture's talking to me seems a lot more fun, a lot more pleasurable. And the parent's thinking, yes, it is, but it's deathly dangerous. And the kid at age 21 or 25 or 30 or 32 is going, get out of my face. And that's so hard for parents to deal with now.
That's part of the modern psychological narrative, that when people seek out therapy, I've heard you speak about this. The therapist won't tell the kid you have to come to some kind of moral onus and ownership. It's your parents' fault. It's everyone else's fault. It's the culture's fault, but it's never your fault.
It's a nice message. Don't we want to have it? Think about it. Hey, I'm not making bad decisions. It's my parents who screwed me up. And that's a psychological message that's been rooted in our culture for some decades now.
And so as parents are listening to this right now, realizing that we can do the best that we can. We can be vigilant.
Right.
But
no guarantees.
No guarantees.
No guarantees. You know, when I hear parents who say, I have 4 kids, and all of them are still in the faith as adults, I'll say, do you realize what an aberration you are?
Mm.
I saw a statistic, Marcus, that said approximately 80-plus percent of kids who raised in a Christian home go to college and lose their faith. That's bad odds. That's really bad odds. One of the things we did as parents, you weren't going away to college. We had local colleges close by, and at the very least, you're going to go 2 years at a local college. We're not sending you out for total freedom, paying all these loans, knowing you're going to probably lose your faith, and then not work in your degree field anyway. It was a lose, lose, lose. So that's one of the things we did as parents, that our kids either went to college near home or got into some special stuff.
You've brought up yet another crucial point, especially like if we want to drive back that addiction question, but also just generally losing the faith and getting entrenched in a destructive lifestyle. So many parents feel responsible, and this is one of the reasons why.
I failed. That's what they feel. I failed. And they just... One of the messages of psychology is there's a proper formula. That if you do the formula, if you're psychologically correct, then the child will be well-adjusted, make good decisions. And even among religious parents, I call it spiritual correctness. We prayed the rosary in Aramaic while we levitated over broken glass. You know, my kid was 8 years old and he was saying the mass in the living room. We did all the Catholic things. And then when she was 19... What the heck happened? Because they're of the mindset of, it's a guarantee if we do this. It's not a guarantee. Not anymore. I always tell people this. I say, well, was Jesus perfect?
Yeah.
Well, did he understand human nature? Oh, yes, perfectly. Could he do miracles? Yeah, yeah. Could he get most people to follow him? No. Oh. Let me see if I understand this. You think you're better than the God man. Can you do a miracle? Can you even do a crummy card trick? At some point, you got to be at peace. That's my message. You've done everything you can at some point. And you quit saying, maybe I didn't do everything I can. At some point, you live with the peace that I, as a human being, in my limited knowledge, did what I could.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ray. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.